Hey everybody, let me remind you one more time about my new blueprint for success. It's a project I've spent months and months working on just to help you jumpstart your comedy career and beat the competition. Whether you want to do stand-up, sketch, improv, acting, writing, producing, directing, radio, social media influencing, or even if you want a career behind the scenes as a manager or agent, Blueprint for Success will give you all the tools you need to take your career to the highest levels. With exclusive interviews, my top 50 commercial-free episodes from industry standard, one-on-one coaching with me, and unprecedented access into my knowledge and experience from over 40 years in this crazy business, I guarantee you that with Blueprint for Success, you'll become the creator you've always dreamed of becoming. No one's asking me to do this. I want to do it because I want to help you become truly undeniable. So just go to barrykatz.com, click on Blueprint for Success, and start your incredible journey today. I truly can't wait to work with you to help you change the trajectory of your comedy career forever.
And it's not that it's a totally aberrant thing, because when I was coming up as a stand-up, the soap opera stars were doing that because they figured they could sell 200-300 seats. They could sell that out. And I would get calls when I started doing stand-up. Like, you want to open for Walt Willie from General Hospital?
Walt Willie.
Yeah. You're good. Do 45. He doesn't have an act. So you'd go up. You'd do 45. He'd go up. They'd go nuts for 5 minutes. He'd do jokes that tank, tell a couple of stories. He's done on stage in 10 minutes, and then they're all lining up to get autographs. It's a different way to adjust. So when you say we all want to feed the algorithm, yeah, and the algorithm keeps changing, and you need to market your product.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Industry Standard with me, Barry Katz, live from New York City, having a great time here, watching a lot of great comedians at all of the great comedy clubs here and hanging out with so many wonderful people. It's just an amazing city, and I can't think of a better place to watch stand-up comedy. It's just so, so incredible. If you need to reach me, you can do so at Barry Katz at Twitter or X or at barrykatz.com. Got a great episode today, part one of two with Adam Ferrara, who I love, who I've known for, I think, since I was sperm in this business. He is an incredible person, has gone through amazing adversity and tremendous highs and lows, but also has had incredible success as an actor and as a stand-up comedian. Somebody who just has a tremendous, unique style on stage that always kills, always funny, but also has tremendous relationships with so many different people in the business based on his incredible work as an actor. How many times can you say in your life that somebody, if they took away a part of their career, they could still be a viable, successful, financially happy person? Very rare. But if you took away Adam Ferrara's stand-up, he would make a tremendous living as an actor. If you took away his acting, make a tremendous living as a stand-up comedian. Doesn't depend one on the other. Just completely balanced. Think about that. How often is somebody in the business, our business, truly balanced, where every cylinder of their engine that they utilize is equal to the other one? Very, very rare. But Adam Ferrara is that kind of guy, and a guy who continues to work over and over and over again. And as a guy who every comedian loves, they love hanging around him, they love watching him, and they love working with him as a thespian. Think about that. Think about how many people have hired this guy. Think of how many people he's worked with, from Kevin James to Emma Roberts to Hayden Christensen to Ryan Reynolds to Dennis Leary. The list goes on and on and on. And I can guarantee you, if you can figure out how to create those kind of relationships and create performances that make them want to hire you again and again and again, I guarantee you, you'll have the possibility of the kind of long-standing, respected, incredible career like Adam Ferrara has. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome my guest today. What an honor, a blast from the past, and a man who's a big part of my history and my life and my obtrusive thoughts in my mind, Adam Ferrara.
How are you, my friend? Thank you for having me. This is great. We've gone back a long time, and I'm glad I ran into you at the cell. I'm glad you asked me to do this.
I'm glad, too. I have so many things to ask you.
We're here.
But I want to break down comedy with you because I
got to go. I'm going to do this. Jesus Christ. I came here to buy real estate with no money down.
Well, I can't do that. I love watching your comedy.
Thank you.
And I think that there's something about you that's really, really unique and special. And I was saying to my son and my assistants that watching your routines, it's all you need to know about life and comedy, because there's no possible way that anyone in the free world can't find your stuff funny.
Oh, thank you. I wish you were in every audience on the Late Show Friday. Well, that's very kind of you. Thank you.
Yeah, let me finish.
Oh, there's more.
No, I'm kidding. I'm joking. No, but I was like watching like so many routines. Like, you have a routine on historical or biblical or whatever it is, where you talk about the Jews, you talk about a wedding where a mom is upset that her gay son's partner is now Jewish and not upset that he's gay. Yeah. It's just, it doesn't matter if it was 20 years ago or today, it's all relevant. The routines on depression and anxiety are incredible. And
those haven't gone away. I still suffer from those. But, well, thank you. That's very kind of you. I mean, a lot of things I try to do is, if I could just articulate what I'm going through and it reaches other people, you know, and you don't feel so alone. It's pretty much all about me, Barry, to be honest with you. That's the connection. And being on stage, for me, that's the state of grace. You know, that's when where you're a vessel, you know, it's coming through me, it's not coming from me. So when I can articulate something that someone else is feeling, that's very gratifying for me, and that's what I try to do in those bits. So thank you for noticing something like that.
Do you feel most comedians, the moment they grab the microphone until the moment they release the microphone in front of a crowd, do you think most comedians would say there's a pause button that's pressed on the world and a pause button that's pressed on all of those thoughts in their mind that affect them negatively?
Yeah. I think the what you're not thinking, the first time I was on stage, July 13th, 1988, Eastside Comedy Club, Wednesday night, open mic night, Jericho Turnpike, Long Island, New York. It's now a Pomodoro restaurant. But when I stepped off...
I thought it was an Olive Garden.
When I stepped off stage, I realized, and I knew, I'm not thinking. And I got that ping. You know when you hit a golf ball right, you get the ping? I got that ping. I went, okay, I belong here. I don't know how long I'll be able to stay here, but I belong here. So a lot of things for me, when you say things stopped, a lot of the anxiety and concern stopped for me, because I found a bigger thing to connect to. And it came out through connecting with that audience. And I didn't know, because I was always felt less than in my house. My dad was my hero, and my dad could fix anything. I love cars, can't fix them. I know how they work. I can't fit. Now you pick it up, the carburetor's gone. There should be a sign, call the guy. You're going to f*** this up, call the guy. So my father could build anything. He was very handy. He was this big, towering man. And he just – he was the ideal I wanted to aspire to be. But I didn't have the if-then go-to statement. So I always felt less than. But when my dad came home from work, I could make him laugh. And when I made him laugh, the face would change. The worry went away. The anxiety went away. And he had this big laugh. My father's laugh could fill up a room, Barry. It's like, hey, he was Gleason, my dad. So I went, oh, that's how I fit in here. That's how I can contribute. So when I did it on stage for the first time, I went, bing. It took that feeling from the house and put it out into the world. And I got my first big laugh and boom. You know.
Do you remember what your first laugh was, what you said?
What had happened was I told my mother I was going down to an open mic night. Now, my mother is the original Twitter. You tell her, goes out to the universe. So the whole neighborhood showed up and it was a little room, you know, Adam's doing comedy. So I knew everybody. So when I went in, it was sold out on a Wednesday. So when I went in to do my act, I threw the act out the window, whatever I wrote, because they would just go, hey, you better be funny. And I just made fun of my cousin, you know, just to do what I did. And then I was just working the crowd. And then I was doing it instinctually. And before I knew it, the 5 minutes were up and I killed.
It's very unusual that on your first set, you would invite your family.
Invite my family. I told my mother. She invited everybody. Believe me, I didn't do it. I didn't want everybody there. So, Mom, going down to do this thing. And everybody showed up. And I didn't. I walked in and I saw my father. I go, what are you doing here? Your mother.
Okay, so you get off stage. The first thing your mom says to you, the first thing your father says to you.
I get off stage. My father went, see you tomorrow. Louise, get in the car. He gave me a kiss. He said, Louise, get in the car. And my mother said, I don't like the language. So I went down. I went down to my father's shop the next day. And he was looking at me like he's never looked at me before. Barry was like, and I said, listen, I want to give this a shot. He took a long drag off his lucky. And he looked at me and he said, do it now. He said, do it now before your life gets complicated. But if you're going to do this thing, you better give it everything you got. Because one day there's going to be an old man in a mirror looking back at you. And you don't ever want to think, if I only tried that much harder.
Awesome. So when your mom had a separate moment with you alone where there's nothing, it's just, what was her first thing she said?
Your father and I want you to be happy, but you could have told us this before we paid for college. Find your joy. So my name was up. Comedy, Tropicana Hotel, Adam Ferrara. I got a disposable camera. I took a picture of that and I sent it to my father. That was success for my dad. He had it framed hanging in his office because that's what he's used to seeing.
Sinatra. Not the Tonight Show.
He could give a shit. Sinatra, Elvis, they all played Vegas. My name was up there in lights in Vegas, and that was success for my dad. And then after my name went down, it said prime rib $8.99. But he hung that in there. And I remember when I would go down, because I would get, because I got depression, I got anxiety, you know, I get emotionally up and down. And, you know, my dad was.
And that was always the case, even when you're riding the bus to the mall.
Yeah. It was.
So you always knew you. When did you first know you had anxiety and depression? What age?
I didn't know what it was. I just thought I didn't fit in because it wasn't labeled then. It wasn't. I said, I guess this is just what it is. This is just what life is.
Did you ask your friends if they felt the same thing?
No, because I didn't know. I guess this is when you're younger, you're like, I guess this is what it is. You don't have a frame of reference. You don't know anything's wrong. You just know this is the way you feel and the rest of the world is fine. So there was no communication. It was a different time back then. So you didn't know. Believe me, I knew as I'm getting older, if I knew that aging was going to happen to me, I wouldn't have given a shit about anxiety. I'm getting the shit kicked out of me now. I was like, I should have enjoyed when I came.
But you knew aging was going to happen because you see your relative.
Conceptually, but you don't think it's going to happen to you. You know, you're a kid. Look at these kids. They don't f***ing know. It's coming for you too, you little bastard. So yeah, I didn't know that I had this thing. I just knew that I didn't feel like I fit in. And when I did comedy, I felt like I fit in. So.
You mentioned aging, which is something that we never talk about. I never talk about.
It's happening, Barry. I'm looking at you right now. Trust me, it's happening.
I know. I look like I'm, you know.
You've looked better.
I look like Nick Nolte and Down and Out in
Beverly
Hills.
This is what I don't get. You have money. I know you have
you
money.
Think I am.
I know, but stop it. Stop. All right. Are you, you
want me to clean? You want me to
I don't know what you do. Are you working on a psych defense like Jimmy the Chin? What are you doing? You're just wandering around the village going, he can't stand trial. Look at him.
Alu Bell and I have a lot to talk about.
I love Alu Bell, and I'm glad his name's not Lou.
Ah, genius. Yes. Yes, I have looked better. But you
I'm
know,
I'm playing with you.
You know, my when I was a young kid, my dad had built a bar in the basement of our house. And I went down there when I was a young kid to just look around. And I found these bar glasses. I just thought they were regular glasses. And on them were different sayings.
Right.
And one of the sayings on one of them was, "I'm not as good as I once was, but I'm as good once as I ever was." And I'm like 7 years old. I go up to my mother. I said, "Mom, what is that?"
"Put that away."
You know, so.
That's funny.
But do you feel like you're old?
No, I don't. In my head, I'm 12 years old. In my head, I'm 12 years old. I don't feel old at all. I just, it's just that the adjustment to change is taking longer, if that makes any sense.
And give an example.
Like, all you got to do is download this app. You know, I still write with a pencil. I still do this, you know. So it's like, you know, every time I got to do, you know how you call tech support in my house? "Honey, you better fix this thing," you know. So the communication with the world is taking me a little bit of an adjustment period, but I'm getting it. The font on the phone's a little bit bigger.
Hey, everybody. I hope you're enjoying this episode as much as I am. If you made it this far and you haven't fallen asleep yet, then you must be the type of person who's serious about having a career in the comedy business. That's why I'm offering you my blueprint for success, a one-of-a-kind all-access pass into my knowledge and experience after over 40 years of working with the best of the best in this crazy entertainment industry. I'll tell you all the stories, all the philosophies, give you all the great special guests, and even give you one-on-one private consultations to help you expand, enhance, and skyrocket your comedy career. Just go to BarryKatz.com and click on Blueprint for Success to learn more about my groundbreaking digital academy that I've created just for you. With it, we can take your career so far that one day, instead of listening to this podcast, you'll be interviewed on it.
Now, you're married and you spoke to your wife before you came here, and yeah. Just listening to you talk to your wife was really magical for me. And I just thought to myself, why doesn't every man talk to their wife after 12 or 13 or 15 years of being with them? The things you were doing on the phone, which our audience don't know, they weren't here to be privy to it. But you were just doing this thing where you were just, you know, you're whispering on the phone and you were like saying funny jokes to her, but also telling her how much you loved her in your own way, your own love language. And I think so many comedians are miserably unhappy because they can't find a woman to keep the train on the tracks. Or, I'm sorry, let me rephrase that. They can't find a partner to keep the train on the tracks.
Yeah. It's
how did you, you know, when you're a comic, you're doing your thing, you meet a lot of women in life. It's just a natural thing. You're funny. And if you're a heterosexual guy in the comedy business, you're going to meet women, whether you try to meet them or not. And there's a lot of frogs. So how did you decide that she was your partner, and what is it about her that kept the train on the tracks where other people couldn't keep it on the tracks?
Well, my wife is, and you guys can't see it, my wife is stunningly beautiful. She's gorgeous, and she has to be, because God says, like, God looked down and went, "Putz, how high do I got to burn this bush? If you don't see this, you asshole." So she's beautiful. And how did I decide? It was I learned the difference between, or I got an awareness of the difference between have to and want to. You know, everything, every relationship, there was a point in a relationship was like, I have to. I got to. Yeah.
You mean where the woman drew the line in the sand and said, listen.
No, it was the life we were living together was always, you know, we have to do this. We have to do, I got to do this. I wanted to do this. I wanted to do this with this person. I wanted to be with this person. And she just elevates everything. And I need something to, I need someone to call me on my shit. And she does. And, you know, and I call her on hers. She's crazy too, Barry. Beautiful's nice, but she's nuts too. You know, the thing I figured out is I want to go through it with her. And what I figured out makes the marriage better is you can't be crazy at the same time. That's the key. I know her crazy. She knows my crazy. So when you come home and the crazy's going on, I came home the other day. She likes to feed her birds, right? Like a bird feeders and stuff. She's looking up in the sky. She's crying. I'm like, what's the matter? She's like, Amazon sent us poison bird seed. There's no birds. They're clearing the skies for their delivery drones. I'm like, honey, clearly it's your turn. I was going to come home, bitch about the price of gas, maybe punch the refrigerator, but I'll reschedule because you need me now. So she made everything better. And it was just everything was easier. I think when you land on something or when you arrive at a point in your life when there's a flow or there's a things are happening easier, that's when it's you're connected to something. Whatever you want to call it. God, Tao, Doug, Krishna, whatever the fuck you want to call it. So things just became easier and things became clearer when we were together. And there was the pull to be with each other. We still drive each other crazy. I mean, believe me, she's glad I go on the road. You know, her and the dogs are like, when's he going back out? You know.
Now, you mentioned something that always fascinates me. You said that, you know, she's really beautiful. And then you make the self-deprecating joke, you know, this is not a lateral move for me. Something like that, you know.
Oh,
but aging, it's true for everybody. So you're going to age and probably in some people's eyes aren't going to be as handsome as you were.
Right.
Your wife is going to age. She's
Why am I doing this podcast? I don't need this. I got this in my head. I don't need you shitting on me. Jesus Christ.
So this is the way life works. Yeah. And so I think the challenge in relationships and comedy, the reason why I'm talking to you about this, because I think you're an amazing resource of how to break down not only comedy, but how it relates to your personal relationships and your family relationships, because there's very few people you can talk to about these things.
Yeah.
And so we can break down funny all day long, but for you, there has to be this unique ecosystem of balance between family and your relationships and your friends that make you the funniest possible, I think, in my opinion.
Well, yeah, it's what you draw. I'm not a social critic, and I'm not a political comic. I'm more of a student of the human condition and the family. And I like to talk about relationships and family because it's what we're all kind of dealing with. You know, we no matter what your political position is, you got a mother and a father. You got a wife or a husband. You got someone who loves. You got someone who loves you. So to be independent but still be part of something and to look at what that struggle is, I think is interesting to me. And that's why I like to talk about the relationship, the dynamics of a relationship.
What do you think is the genesis? If you had to say there's one thing that's at the top of the list that drives your premises and makes you funny as humanly possible, what is it?
If what I'm trying to do is trying to be better and articulate the frustration of doing that, and looking at the world is like, well, like right now, one of the things I'm working on is I want to be better, but it's not easy. You know, I got a joke about, and I don't want to do bits, but everyone has their coping mechanism. You know, my cousin is born again, and I'm pretty annoyed it happened the first time. But that's his comfort. You know, that's bringing him comfort. This is a structure of behavior that will bring you comfort and the promise of salvation. Believe me, I got my problems with the Catholic Church. You know, all salvation is in the future. You know, don't touch it. Don't. That, you're not going to go there if you touch it now. So I think if in answer to your question, what drives me is I'm trying to be better and I'm trying to aspire and to be a better, fully rounded person, but it ain't f***ing easy. So to write about that struggle, I think is a kind of a universal thing.
I always, you know this because we've had many conversations, and mm-hmm. I hope you know how much love I have for you, and we've had so many.
It's been a long time, as I do for you, my friend.
So many things that, I just laugh so hard when I think about all the things that has happened between us and intertwined between us. But when it all comes down to it, it's about funny.
Yeah.
You know, besides that, yeah, you can say, well, this guy was a wonderful person and he was so kind and he was so generous. But when it comes down to the world, we don't worry about what Sinatra did. We listen to New York,
yeah,
New York,
yeah,
and we enjoy
music.
It.
It's the end product. Yeah.
And so your music is your comedy. And I find you to be in an incredible crossroads these past 5 years, before the pandemic and after the pandemic. And I'll explain. You're probably wondering why I would think about you being at a crossroad. Because I believe, and have always believed, that you are one of the most uniquely funny human beings I've ever seen on stage, who bridges the gap between the old comedians from the past, like Jackie Mason or Hackett, people like that, Robert Klein, to the new comedians like Fluffy. He's not new. He's almost right. 50. But I'm saying, like, a new generation that came after you,
mm-hmm.
that tell great stories, or a guy like Bert Kreischer who can tell a great story and be enthusiastic about the story. The difference between everybody and you is that you have this controlled storytelling ability. Really, really controlled, like the old guys. The new comedians don't have a controlled storytelling style. They have like a party storytelling style.
Yeah.
And it's more of a, you know, that happy-go-lucky thing, whereas yours is like a theatrical performance. And I think it's hard the way the world changes, and I want to talk to you about this as well as a backup as you keep going, because I know I'm rambling, but we talked before the podcast about how it is and how life changes, but also comedy changes and the world changes. And I talked to you about how, hey, you know, Rudolph Valentino had to worry about going from silent pictures to talking pictures, and the people who were doing radio had to worry about how sure. they go to television. And so in every incarnation of our entertainment business, there's changes. And if you don't make the changes, or as I said, you know, the tree falls in the middle of the road sometimes when you're driving, and some people figure out how to get around and go to their destination, and some people are left behind. You're a guy who's always, as I watch your stuff and I see you, you're always trying to figure out and fight through it. And many times you win. But even when you win and you get millions and millions of hits, sometimes it doesn't translate into the millions and millions of hits of other comedians.
Yeah.
And it's like a Rubik's Cube puzzle that you have to figure out, and every comedian has to figure out. And some comedians, who shall remain nameless, started as a teenager like you. You know, went 13 years working sea rooms.
Mm-hmm.
And then one day something happens and they figure out what the audience wants from them,
yeah,
more than anything else that they haven't been giving them. And I always feel like you feel you're in a race,
yeah,
to find that algorithm. What do I have to do that's going to get the world to see what certainly I see every day. I'm in person with you. I haven't seen you in a long time. I laugh really, really hard. I see you on stage. I laugh really, really hard.
Yeah. It's the delivery system is different.
Hang on one second. This is the most amazing. Adam's going to be talking about this. I just want to share with the audience. So I am doing this podcast in a hotel in New York City.
Yeah. Barry's making a snuff film.
I had scheduled Adam for 11 o'clock, and I just didn't think to myself, why did I have him scheduled for 11 o'clock? And then we moved it back to noon so it can be more better for him and make it right. And, of course, there's knocks on the door. Yeah. There's phone calls.
Housekeeping.
Housekeeping. And it's like, oh, my God. Nah. Every time I'm with Adam, something happens where he's like,
yeah.
And fun. So it's this crazy thing that happens. And I remember you being, I share this with you all the time, but I've never shared on the podcast.
Tell him.
So I'm in California. I want to represent Adam. Mm-hmm. He's taking meetings. And he comes to the office to meet with me. And, you know, I'm really prepared for the meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm ready, and I'm really normally really great at sitting down with people and talking to them, just not today. But, and I sit down, and I'm all prepared, and there was one thing that I wasn't prepared for. Mm. I sit down, my ass hits the cushion, and Adam leans over in the 45-degree or 90-degree counseling position and says...
Yeah. What did you kill a guy? What did you do? What did you do? Because I said, I'm meeting with Barry. They went, oh, Barry. I'm like, that's all they say is, oh, Barry. But they don't tell me what you did. Do you have human body parts in your basement? Tell me, Barry.
And so he said that to me. And my natural inclination was to say that a line that a person said before they went to prison.
Okay.
Bill Cosby.
Yeah.
And I shared this with you. I don't know if you remember. I said one of my favorite quotes from Bill Cosby is, if they're not talking bad about you, then you got a problem.
Yeah.
You know, when they're talking bad about you, you're doing something right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, even getting back to, and I don't know how you want to edit this, but getting back to the evolution and the delivery system, it's just to get now. It's like if they're not talking about, no one's talking about, you could have someone that have millions of followers that you've never heard of. You know, the thing about our new, the new structure and the new business model is we used to just have to be good comics, right? And the comedy club would have put you on radio in the morning to get the audience in, and you would do press, and the club would get the audience, and you'd make them laugh, and that's the way it worked. Now, we're all cult leaders. We need followers. And you got to bring them in. It's not a comedy club. It's the place to see the guy that's on your phone. That's because it doesn't have to be comics. It can be, you know, people that are just making videos. And there's no show, you know, because they don't know how to do it. And it's not that it's a totally aberrant thing, because when I was coming up as a stand-up, the soap opera stars were doing that because they figured they could sell 200-300 seats. They could sell that out. And I would get calls when I started doing stand-up. Like, you want to open for Walt Willie from General Hospital?
Walt Willie.
Yeah. Yeah, good. Do 45. He doesn't have an act. So you'd go up. You'd do 45. He'd go up. They'd go nuts for 5 minutes. He'd do jokes that tank, tell a couple of stories. He's done on stage in 10 minutes, and then they're all lining up to get autographs. And, you know, that's it. So it's not that it's a different way to adjust. So when you say we all want to feed the algorithm, yeah, and the algorithm keeps changing, and you need to market your product. And I was never really that good at it because maybe it was lack of self-esteem, humility, what it was. But I was never good at ringing the bell and standing there with a sandwich board. I'm funny. You know,
I think you don't have to ring the bell and have a sandwich board.
Right.
All you have to do is do great content and just show the audience in little bits and pieces, and one day they find something that they grasp and that they love, and it changes things. Now, your argument would be, well, Barry, it doesn't always change things.
No, it doesn't.
I got these clips that are amazing, and they're that I not don't have a sandwich board. I just put up the clip, millions of views, and I go to the comedy club, and they're not there because of that particular clip. But for some people, they are.
Yeah, no, they come for the nice thing about when people come to see me is they come for the clip, they come for the a specific clip, and then you have to do that. Like now, there's bits I have to do now because they've seen them and they want to see them live. So I got to do the anxiety derby bit. I got to do
which is a great thing. I'm so glad you said that because this is fantastic.
Go ahead.
So in comedy, as many people know who listen to this, you know, you do a comedy special. And you can't do that material ever again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Meanwhile, Mick Jagger sings Satisfaction at
every show. Every show.
The reality is when you put stuff online,
yeah,
you are a rock star and they want to see the bits again.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a different – it's what in my head, it's I'm still writing albums and they just want singles. You know, so even specials are getting shorter. You know, used to be an hour. Now you can get away with 40 minutes, half an hour.
I saw Dave Attell the other night, and I said, how's your last special? How's it going? He says, it's a lot of work. I'm editing it. It's, you know, right now it's at 37 minutes.
Yeah.
And I said, that's fantastic. You're doing 30-minute specials now. He said, yeah. I mean, it has the same effect, and I don't burn all the material.
Yeah.
And I can put them out more.
Yeah. You keep feeding more material into it. It doesn't have to be about a thing. It could just be bit, you know. But see, I like to write about something. So I'll exhaust a topic and then whack that up. But it's a different delivery system, and it's different product schedules too.
As always, this has been Industry Standard with me, Barry Katz. And if you like the show, tell all your friends. And if you don't like the show, tell all your friends.
You get all the money, drive that fancy car. All the people love you, cause you're going far. Life is for the dreamers, they have all to gain. It's never quite over till it all feels the same. You pick your own poison, dig your own grave down in the valley.
Thank you for listening to Industry Standard with Barry Katz. If you'd like more info on our schedule of new episodes or how to reach Barry through Twitter, Facebook, or email, go to BarryKatz.com. Before you leave, please take a moment to subscribe to our podcast, leave a comment, and rate it, even if you think it blows. Thank you for your support, and have a great day.
Hey, everybody. Let me remind you one more time about my new blueprint for success. It's a project I've spent months and months working on just to help you jumpstart your comedy career and beat the competition. Whether you want to do stand-up, sketch, improv, acting, writing, producing, directing, radio, social media influencing, or even if you want a career behind the scenes as a manager or agent, Blueprint for Success will give you all the tools you need to take your career to the highest levels. With exclusive interviews, my top 50 commercial-free episodes from Industry Standard, one-on-one coaching with me, and unprecedented access into my knowledge and experience from over 40 years in this crazy business. I guarantee you that with Blueprint for Success, you'll become the creator you've always dreamed of becoming. No one's asking me to do this. I want to do it because I want to help you become truly undeniable. So just go to BarryKatz.com, click on Blueprint for Success, and start your incredible journey today. I truly can't wait to work with you. to help you change the trajectory of your comedy career forever.